In 2008, farmers grew enough to feed twice the world's population, yet more people starved than ever before, and most of them were farmers. In his new book, Bet the Farm, food writer Frederick Kaufman sets out to discover the connection between the global food system and why the food on our tables is getting less healthy and less delicious, even as the world's biggest food companies and food scientists say things are better than ever. Kaufman will be speaking at Verdigre Tea on Warren Street in Hudson on Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m., and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Frederick, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
So what brought you to this particular project?
I had been writing about food for many years in American food culture and American food history. And wrote about the Food Network, wrote about kosher food, a million food topics. And finally, I was talking to my editor, and we said, okay, Fred, we've done enough about food. How about no food? And so I started looking into why not everybody on Earth can have healthy, delicious, and inexpensive food, why there are so many people, almost a billion, who consistently don't get enough to eat.
How do you boil it down in looking at that problem? Is it obviously, as the book points out, it's not a simple one?
Oh, it's a complex problem, but it kind of can boil down to a very simple equation, which is that people don't starve because there's not enough food. In fact, the world produces generally about twice the amount of food necessary to feed everybody on it every year. People go hungry because they can't afford the food. And so in a sort of classic journalistic tactic, I began to follow the money, and I started to ask the question, well, if people starve because they can't afford the food, how does food get its price? And why is the price of food going up and up and up?
I do want to, in many of the things that you talk about in the book and that you'll be talking about when you come to Hudson, revolve around, I mean, just look at the subtitle of the book, How Food Stopped Being Food.
Yeah.
We seem to be very concerned about what we eat in this country, and that seems to be the local food movement and other movements seem to be growing, and yet, as you point out in the book, there is a lot of money in starvation.
Absolutely. What I think people are beginning to realize two things, which is that real food and slow food and local food is a very valuable sort of thing to recognize. And at the same time, I think people are beginning to perceive that much of the global food system is actually virtual food. What I mean by that is food that's not being measured necessarily by where it's from or what it actually is, but as a legal construct, as intellectual property, as a political football, and even a financial derivative. Remember those?
Yeah. Let me ask you your opinion and bring this back to Election Day for a moment. California voters appear to have rejected a ballot measure that would have made the state the first in the nation to require labeling of foods made from genetically modified crops. It looks like this is going to go down 53-47%, which is interesting considering that at the beginning, in early polling, it was 60-70% of the people approved this, and then
the yes on 37 group was outspent roughly 6-1. We have to remember,
yes,
really led by industry giants such as Monsanto and Dow and Bayer and Coca-Cola and Nestle, the people who are the retailers. On the other hand, so really this was a very strong campaign on the no side, led by an ex-tobacco lobbyist. I do not think that this spells in any way, shape, or form the death of the food movement as a political construct. And in fact, in many ways, I think this defeat is going to teach us many lessons about how to move forward more expeditiously in the future.
Well, such as, I mean, in first of all, I think this was just a baby step, many felt. I mean, and we couldn't even get that far. You know what I mean? I mean, in the sense that this was just one very small thing that they were looking of, oh, well, why don't you tell us what you've done to our food before we eat it?
Well, I think, first of all, what we're going to see almost immediately are similar types of propositions in Washington State and in Oregon. You know, we're going to see a push towards this. But also, I think what we're coming to see with this is that the question of transparency is actually not a simple one. It's actually not a simple one, and that I think that was the opening that allowed the no to come through. I think there's a very strong sense of who's going to pay the price, how is this going to be enforced, and all of these other matters that actually were, as the LA Times pointed out, not particularly and specifically addressed in the legislation. So I know that's kind of a somewhat legalistic and heavy going there, but I think there are many lessons to be learned here, and above all is that question, that point, that transparency is not a simple matter, particularly when we have such, our food system has become so complicated by so many other factors. I think we're going to learn the lesson, though. I think we're going to go forward on it.
So you're optimistic?
I am. I think I'm optimistic because I think this is also a way for people to enter into a much stronger learning curve on genetic modification and what it means and all the various uses and misuses of it. I think that's part of what this is all about, is people are all of a sudden realizing it's not a simple game, it's a complicated game, there are very big players, this is what the threat is, and this is the specific way we can respond.
You asked the question in the book, why can't delicious, inexpensive, and healthy food be available to everyone on Earth? So you talk about this transparency being difficult and making these issues difficult, but it seems like we're making them more difficult for the sake of, it doesn't have to be difficult, right?
You know, it's so funny. I think that we've been so divorced from our relationship. It's even such a funny word to use, a relationship with food. It's such a natural, uncomplicated, basic thing, what we eat, how we get it. But in fact, that kind of idea of the farmer and the urban dweller working together, knowing each other, coming together, is not at all simple, as we see. In fact, it's rather revolutionary, considering where we are now in the food system. And so once again, I think that there is a very strong push, and there has to be a strong push towards all these things that we understand are vital, such as slow food and local food and relationship with the farmer and the urban dweller. And these are not simple things. These are complicated things. They need a lot of work and focus.
Just back to the Proposition 37 in California, the backers of that proposition said that all they really wanted in the end was to put anywhere from 2 to 6 words on the label. That's it. And for that to cause as much consternation and as much money put into that campaign, why are those 2 words, genetically modified, so loaded so that they would not want them on the label?
Well, this is that's the essential question you're asking, and this is the subtitle of my book, How Food Stopped Being Food. It's because food has stopped being food that this has become so central and so emotional and such a focus and such a big deal, because people are very focused on, have become increasingly focused, let's say, on what it is that they're putting in their mouths for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And industry understands also at the same time how much is at stake.
We put labels on everything. We put labels on, and we tell.
And this is part of the problem. I mean, that's actually part of the issue, is that during research for the book, I went out to Arkansas, you know, talked to all these sustainability marketers who work for Walmart. And sustainability itself has become a label, and there's a tremendous amount of labeling noise out there. And there's also, and this is, you know, not something that has really been widely reported, there is a fair bit of within the other parts of people, other let's say elements of natural food or organic food, who are not particularly happy about competing labels such as non-GMO. So there's a lot of noise out there, and this is also part of the issue. Is the answer a label, or is that label simply going to be another thing that people can disregard? And that question is still out there. If even this labeling is going to have the effect that we want it to have, which is pushing Monsanto and Dow out of the business, right? So I think we have to think, what is keeping them in? How can we push them out? And is labeling actually the way? That's why I say it's going to cause a very positive rethink, I believe.
You write in the book, and it's one of the more fascinating parts, where you talk about that it isn't supply and demand, but ultimately the banks who drive how much we pay for food.
Well, that was something that really shocked me as I realized that the price of food was to a great extent controlled by the largest financial institutions on earth, the largest banks and hedge funds and sovereign wealth funds, who realized really after the great financial crisis of 2008 that, hey, where do we put our money? Maybe stocks and real estate and mortgage-backed securities aren't as safe as we thought they were. Maybe even currency, dollars and euros, aren't so great. What has value? Well, they understood what we know, which is that arable land and fresh water and food, that has value. And so they actually started dropping hundreds of billions of dollars into all sorts of newfangled derivative investment instruments that depend on food, and really created an interesting sort of financial demand shock, which sent the global price of food through the roof. We've been seeing unbelievable and unprecedented food inflation and a global food crisis for the past 10 years, since 2002.
So Saturday night, you will be in Hudson. What's the message you want to get across?
Well, first of all, I think we're just going to have some fun talking about the book and drinking some tea. And really, I think I'd like to get across what's going on in the global food system and raise some consciousness. I think that's my message right there.
Simple as that.
Yeah, and simple as that. Why not? Get the bankers out of the food system. How about that?
That's good enough. It's a fascinating book. A lot to take in. It's Bet the Farm: How Food Stopped Being Food. It's published by Wiley. Frederick Kaufman, I thank you very much for being with us, and it'll be good to have you in the region. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Again, Frederick Kaufman will be speaking at Verdigre Tea on Warren Street in Hudson on Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m. You can go to www.verdigretea.com for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.